Okay, welcome. Should we take our seats? I hope you like this. Do you like the seating arrangement? It's nice, isn't it? It's good, isn't it? It's good, isn't it? You will agree. What you'll find is that we have to do this when we gather leaders, because we set the seating plan very carefully, because there's so many feuds and bitter hatreds. It's like one of those family get-togethers. You think, no, we can't sit him with her, and that. So we've done that very carefully. It took Joe Milligan about a week to do it, and we reviewed it as elders and looked into it. And no, it's pretty random as far as I know, okay, just to put you at ease. You should have some notes in front of you, which will also be reflected in the PowerPoint that will be up there. I wanted to get you something on paper so that you could scribble if you wanted to take a note down or write a question down or just kind of raise something. And so it's helpful to have stuff on paper as well as on screen sometimes. Really good time of worship as well. Thanks, where's Simon? Thank you, Simon. So well led. Just really appreciate it. Nice. Did you write that song? Brilliant. Thank you. Amazing song. Needs tweaking. No, I don't think it does, but I'm sure you. I was going to say. that comment may reflect the makeup of your table. I can see why. Yeah, the song needs a lot of tweaking. Yeah. Excellent. Okay. Well, I'm so grateful for that time of worship, because I think it frames things brilliantly for the day and helps us to get the perspective we need. We come up here as not actually primarily as servants of God, even though we are. We come up as sons and daughters. We come as those who belong to Him, who have the privilege of being involved in His purposes. We don't do this to draw a wage. I do, but you don't. We do this to have fun, actually. It's part of the privilege of sonship, to engage with God and enjoy being part of His kingdom. And it's all grace. It's all a gift of grace. And I'm so grateful that God set me free, rescued me when I was a teenager from some of my own kind of foolish, selfish ambitions. And He has to keep doing it all the time, because they kind of reemerge in various ways. But I'm so glad He's replaced it ultimately with a greater ambition, which is the kingdom of His Son, Jesus. And that's what we're here about. So I'm excited about that, and excited about today. We've wanted to put together these kinds of contexts over the years. And in different ways, we've gathered as leaders across the church. Most of you would have been around when we've gone away as leaders, sometimes for a weekend. We went to places like Ashburnham over in near Hastings. We've been to Bracklesham over near Chichester. Last year, we had a conference here that was in this room. I think PJ spoke at it in the early part of last year. This year, we thought, shall we gather all the leaders again from all the sites and do a conference? And we thought, well, I think let's not do that this year. Let's rather aim to gather as site leaders within sites. And so this is just New England. This is a little bit more intimate, and it's not a weekend. It's just a day, obviously, including last night. It's more than that. Last night was fantastic, wasn't it? Just so loved it. So appreciated getting time with you guys and enjoying your company a little bit, enjoying the food, enjoying the weather, enjoying Nigel and Annie's incredible house and the garden that just has this beautiful view. It was just amazing, and so just grateful to God for all the different ways that He blessed us with last night. And we're wise and right to get time away as leaders just to connect. We need to do it better and better. I hope that next year we can think a little further, be a bit more creative. I appreciate the times when you get to go away rather than being in our own building. This has been wonderful, and it will be wonderful, but perhaps next year we can think a little further down the track, and sometimes an issue of budget and so on. So it's something we need to keep praying about. But getting time with leaders is vital for being before God, as we have done this morning, and for getting briefed and clarified on what things are going on, where we're going. Today is going to be pretty practical. It'll be a bit newsy. I'm not preaching. I'm just kind of giving you some info about where we're headed and some key things for us to just be on the same page about. So a little different than it might be in a kind of standard conference. But I hope it's very helpful. For some of you, the news will be directly relevant in lots of ways. For others of you, it will be more kind of indirectly relevant. So if you're thinking, well, how does this relate to me? Just receive it as part of the church. You know, if it relates to your brother, it relates to you. Okay? Just remember that we're one body. It may not directly hit you every point, but let's be grateful. If something's about someone else in the church, then it's about you. And it's something to be hearing and receiving prayerfully and with faith. So let me start by putting this in context of our overall mission. I like using this phrase. When people say, what is CCK about? I often use this phrase. Oh, you can go back. I like the first one. Turning idolaters into worshippers. I say often that we don't use this on our letter-headed paper. It's not particularly clever to do that. It's a little bit aggressive. Could get misinterpreted. And maybe it needs replacing. In fact, one of our friends in the church who's in this site, who's a fairly high-flying marketing guy, has come up with some suggestions about other words we can use, which I think is very helpful. We haven't completely reviewed all his suggestions yet, but we may end up with a different slogan that just says the same thing, but in a slightly less, we're going to blow your house up kind of tone. But it's still whatever it is, it is our desire, because we know that God wants not just people in buildings and bums on seats and that kind of progress, although that's a step in the right direction. He wants hearts transformed. He wants worship renewed. Everyone's born worshiping. Everyone right now in Brighton and Hove is worshiping. No one is not worshiping. You are now, and so is your non-Christian neighbor. They're just worshiping the wrong things. And we need to draw their hearts, not just their intellectual assent or their wallets or their church-going behaviors and habits, but their hearts to give worship to God out of true affection for him. And that's right at the heart of what we will be doing. We've sometimes, often shared with you this acronym that we've also begun to use, this CREATE, which again is open to review. We want to get the wording right all the time, but it says a lot. It's a really good crack at just sort of saying what we're about. Consistently praying, recognizing cultures, in other words, you know, learning our city, learning, listening, understanding what's in the heart, what are people, how can we connect well with the people in the culture we've been called to reach. Extending friendship, being like Jesus, friends with sinners. Adding services, sites and cities. We could add the word small groups in there, I think wouldn't be a bad idea, but you get the point. Raising up more and more of these key contexts where we can gather people to the gospel. T, transforming idolaters into worshippers. That's kind of the big one before, but it happens in the context of gathering to worship. And then E, equipping for cultural renewal. We want to not just gather people to our meetings, whatever meetings that we don't just gather them into one context. We want to equip so that we as a community are able to represent Christ and his kingdom in whichever context we are. So we're salt and light in the midst of the realities of the city. And we're learning as we go. We've all kinds of things to keep learning about how we do this more and more effectively. That's the big picture. It's always worth touching on that before we move on, so that you know why we're doing what we're doing. We didn't come here today just to get a few bits of practical advice, but we're really about Jesus and his kingdom and his great purpose of winning hearts and transforming culture. Jesus said in John chapter 4 to his disciples, "My food is to do the will of him who sent me and to accomplish his work." That's a striking verse, isn't it? Jesus, who was made to be a man like us, dependent on food and drink, from like a baby, dependent on his mother. Jesus, even Jesus, was taken to that place, and he grows up understanding what it means to say, "My food is this." He wasn't just being religious; he was saying something that he understood from humanity. My food is to do the will of him who sent me. It's not just my job. It's not just what my boss wants me to do. It's my food. It feeds me. To do the will of the one who sent me, to do the thing I was sent to do, to fulfill the mission. Jesus doesn't think, well, there's enjoying life and then there's mission. He doesn't say, well, there's getting fed and then there's mission. Jesus says, no, that I am fed in mission. I enjoy God. I see more of my Father at work in this place of mission. Striking, isn't it? That's the way Jesus thought. We need to follow his example. He's fed, and we're to be fed in this place of seeing what the Father's doing and finishing his work. Do you not say, there are yet 4 months, then comes the harvest? Look, I tell you, lift up your eyes and see that the fields are white for harvest. You know what white means for harvest? You know, in July or August, that sort of time, late August, when the fields are just coated in this massive sea of kind of white golden crops. It's so different than at other seasons. I tell you, lift up your eyes. Already the one who reaps is receiving wages and gathering fruit for eternal life, so that sower and reaper may rejoice together. For here the saying holds true, one sows and another reaps. I sent you to reap that for which you did not labor. Others have labored and you have entered into their labor. Jesus looks at our city and sees a white field. That's how he sees it. I don't see it like that very often. I see it as a hard rocks and a field that's demanding, difficult. I see that we've got to do some plowing and some this and that. And I see the problems. I see the realities, the difficulties, the reasons why it's hard to get in there. It's hard to reach these people, and these people are tough. And there's the attitude of the media and the press, and the attitude of the different worldviews that it's hard, it's hard. Jesus sees differently. He sees fields that are white, and he calls us to catch up with his perspective. See that there's opportunity. It may be that there are different seasons. There's sowing, there's reaping, there's seasons when we have to just go and go at it out of season, as it were. But the big picture is that there's a harvest. And there must be. You know, 97% of our city has no church going as part of its life. 97% of our people in this city, they seem to have no relationship to Jesus. 97%. Over a quarter of a million or more, if you include the whole kind of swathe of the Brighton and Hove urban kind of area. We have a huge harvest opportunity, and to see our role in this life, in the context of what we've been doing downstairs, enjoying God, he says, now come and enjoy me more. Come and enjoy me. Come and have food on the harvest field. Come and receive. Come and see what I'll do through you. Not in your strength. I don't want you to show me your ministry. I want to show you mine, says God. I want to show you what I can do through you. And that's a huge word. I believe that's God spoken that to my heart and many of you today in a big way. So let's talk about where we are, get a bit practical here. As a site, New England, we first of all, I'd say we have a wonderful legacy. We have history that we sometimes forget. And people like me know the history because I planted this church, as you know, in 1979 when I was 4 years old. And so I know the history very well. We began, a few people helped me. My parents thought they were helping me. They were quite helpful. They followed my advice now and then. But I think it's worth saying, if only for people who are relatively new, but also I guess for all of us who can forget what God has done through us. What we've been able to achieve in terms of sending people, raising up leaders, training the next generation, and churches that have been planted globally. People like my dear friends Tom and Julie Eaton, just in touch with Lex Loizides this week, who's in Cape Town still with his family. Just this morning, in fact, talking to Neville Jones, who says, I'm praying for you for today. And in all kinds of different ways, people in global situations who actually are following God faithfully, serving him because of something that happened here. Maybe not in this particular building, but certainly in this church, and many in this building. God has raised up and sent and given us this amazing legacy, not just globally, but also locally, given us the privilege of growth and impact on the city in all kinds of ways. And we could, I'm sure many of us think of a few names that qualify under that. You know, people in Africa, people in Asia, people in America, people in Europe. We've also got a legacy of planting out other sites from New England. So the Shoreham site, which began in 2011, and in the same few months, we planted the Racecourse site, beginning of 2012, and the Villas site at the end of last year, sort of September time. We have had such a wonderful story. And we must sometimes just stop without necessarily being boastful about it, just be grateful for the story. That's an extraordinary thing. God's given us the privilege of launching out three sites in just a couple of years, and all of them are healthy, vibrant, growing, reaching people. Just this last week, Matt Davis shared stories from Shoreham that just made my mouth water. Guys who've come to Christ very recently, within the two, you know, last Sunday and then the Sunday before that. Two different men. Both men who've been around the church in Shoreham for a few months, just being befriended, just being allowed to belong before they have to believe, just connecting well. Matt and Alison are so good at this. And the people that they have around them are so good at this, just making good friends. They do things like the Westival event where they all dress up as druids and sacrifice things. And they want to be contextually relevant to people in Shoreham, I guess. So they kind of, all kind of weird stuff. But they do this thing in that field out there. And they invite all their non-Christian friends and all these just people around them. And then they get them onto Alpha and they have them coming on Sunday after Sunday. Whenever I preach in Shoreham, there's going to be loads, even smaller, much smaller than this room, much smaller than this crowd. But there's always loads of unbelievers just staring at me. You know, partly because they're thinking, what, you're not just on a screen, you know, you're real. But guy who I know, Matt's told me, well, that guy's an atheist. What? Yeah, he's been coming for months, he's an atheist. Wow, that's interesting. He just comes and, you know, and he enjoys it and listens, and it's fascinating. And they've kept going, and they just, as I say, this last Sunday and the Sunday before last, two wonderful, clear conversions. And you know they're clear, or they're clearer, when it's people you've kind of walked with for months. You know what I mean? There's been friendship, there's been connection, and it gives an amazing confidence to them as they start to, it's like you're discipling people before they get saved. That's what Jesus did, isn't it? He discipled the disciples before they got any revelation. And we can do that. We can get around people and be their friends and talk to them about life, help them with their life, even before they come to Christ sometimes. So that's one example. I could go on for a long time about other examples, but it's just so encouraging. And so I think there's lots to be encouraged about in our history. There's also lots to be encouraged about in terms of what's going on here now. There are some good things about New England since we've launched out these three different sites. And I thought rather than do all the talking on that myself, I'd give you the chance to have a chat in your groups for a minute. And why don't we all just think of, just between us, a few things that we can be encouraged about from this last year, this last academic, since launching Hove, I would say, particularly. What's something to be glad for? Highlights of this last year at the New England site. And in a minute, we'll do the equivalent and talk about some of the challenges. So this will be the nice, easy one. And in a minute, we'll talk about some of the stuff that we're working hard at. But why don't you do that just for a minute or two? Can you do that? And I'll call you back and then get just a few shout-outs from each table and compare notes on it. Okay, should we get answers from each table? Richard Spear is going to be my assistant and get round the tables and ask. And I'll just put these down. Perhaps one from each table. I think we'll have to do that for the sake of brevity. Okay, over on table number eight. Go for it. Graham.
Yeah, I was just saying about for Connect, since we Hove was launched, for us, I've got a lot of people who are kind of fringe people in the church serving in Connect, and losing Hove and the people from Hove has really helped them to step up, actually, and given them the responsibility of that. Brilliant. And I could think of three or four people who really have flourished since Hove has left because they've had to step up and really take responsibility, and they've really appreciated that trust.
Brilliant. Thanks, Graham. Excellent.
Brilliant. Okay, going to table nine, I think. Who wants to be a spokesperson here? Mr. Birch, you've got a lovely voice.
Okay, I think the biggest thing which came up for us was how consistently successful Alpha has been. Mm. Particularly the last course, I think it was 70 guests consistently through the course, and even this summer course has seen really strong numbers, even though normally it's quite low.
Yes, yeah.
It's probably the weather, but I mean, you know.
Or God might be doing stuff, but hey, that's not. The weather obviously has more power, but no, brilliant. Thank you, Alex, really encouraging.
And L'Envoy Primus, of course.
Of course, yeah.
Okay, we'll come to table seven, rather illogically, but who wants to be a spokesperson?
Okay, well, we've got a list of about seven, but I'll make do with one. I've got a great team in COGS, and there's one particular memorable Sunday when there were 16 responses to the gospel.
Yes.
Which is pretty awesome. And the second one, just to sneak in, is, of course, we host, although we don't truly do it, Redemption.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. I'll put that in. We host Redemption.
Oh, Alpha again. We had a particularly good alpha this time, and at the end, a few of us have been going and giving prophetic words, and we've seen a number of people healed because of that and responding to the gospel. And also, they some of the people that were healed have spoken at the following week to release more faith. So that's been brilliant.
Fantastic. Very good.
We're going to go with Red Cogs again. It's just been great. We were leading last week, a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking about the fruits of the Holy Spirit, and I was just kind of introducing it as a topic. And I was asking the kids how many, you know, kind of what were the fruits of the Holy Spirit. Wasn't sure what I was going to get. The Virgos didn't know any.
Because they see so few in their parents. Yeah.
But yeah, I was blown away by their knowledge of Scripture, the fruits of the Holy Spirit. And I think going on from what they said over there, that 16 responses, I think seeing the kids grow and there's new leaders throughout all of Red Cogs, that it's exciting. And I'll be asking a few more people to lead.
Brilliant. Go for it. Okay. I mean, we felt that there's been a great opportunity for new serving, new people serving, new leaders have emerged. So people have been challenged and moved on, and that's always good, isn't it? And I think for me, what I've really enjoyed is the breakfast buzz recently. Yeah. I think that's been brilliant.
Brilliant.
Anything else? Empty space. I think, you know, empty space has provided an opportunity, as Phil said, that more people can come in. We've seen more visitors in that sense because of some empty space.
And more leg room as well, which is always good. David Brading, I'm going to elect you.
We've gone for baptisms. Oh. Omar in particular, we just thought that was a real special Sunday, to be very specific. Tom said church membership as well.
Joseph Townend.
We had a few that have been nicked already, but we're going to go for community post-service events. So the meals downstairs. Sorry. It's just been really good. Like, makes it a lot easier after service because often it's so easy to just walk out. But if there's something organised on, it's been great to meet people.
Wonderful. Fantastic. Yeah. That's worth just in that context. Some of you would know more about the post-service things than others, and the pre-service. Someone mentioned breakfast. Was it you, Rick? I think just the way that's working in terms of the lounge before and after the meeting. That's more significant in connecting people, making real friendships than almost anything else, probably. So it's really valuable, and the guys that are serving in that way are doing an amazing job. So brilliant stuff.
Okay, table two has to be a new one, otherwise you have to stay behind at the end of the day for an extra hour till you come up with one.
This isn't Monday.
Wow. Well, we just want to say something about baptisms, so we're happy to stay at the end. But yeah, baptisms are a real highlight for us, both morning and evening, but just quickly on the evening. It was just good for us because we have five, especially this term, but they're all Brighton stories about how people have come to Brighton, either got saved for the first time or really made aware of who Jesus is and discipled and brought along the way. It was just incredible to see how God's playing his part in their story here in our city. So that was just, big for us. And also just the amount of new faces, things like our Mexican night, and other things like that have really just brought people into our building, even for the first time. We had friends that came just at 8 o'clock, not quite ready to come to church yet, but even to just get them in the building and hang out with us, have a beer, have a bit of a party, was just brilliant. So the amount of new faces here has just been wonderful.
Excellent. Thank you.
And last but not least, David.
Thanks, everyone. One more time. No, not really. Something that's been cool for me over the past couple of months, there's been a few occasions where I've been serving alongside non-Christians, actually at the production at the back. We had this really cool case about 3 weeks ago where this French girl was just looking for work experience on sound desk, and she said that she'd never been in a church before in her life.
Wow.
And that's her first time with us. And she's like, yeah, I need the work experience. I'll be back every week. And so sort of knitting her in, and yeah, just cool to have her with us. Yeah.
Ben was getting very excited at the back on that last one, I noticed.
Thank you. That's so good. Okay, so I won't run through the list because of time, but you can see it's a long one, and there's a variety of things mentioned there. Some of them I wouldn't have thought of. I wouldn't have been aware of some of the stories, and you've touched on a lot of exciting extra things. So, good encouragement. I think there's one or two other strengths that I'll just mention briefly besides that. New England site, we find ourselves here with an amazing resource. We have a big, visible, central presence here. This building is substantial. It's one of the biggest venues in the city, actually. And many outsiders who don't know us as a church know us as a place that has a fantastic conference center and are very aware of that. But that works for us in lots of different ways, and it helps us enormously in terms of just attracting people anyway. It's a big, visible, central presence. It's not a small thing. It's a real gift from God. It took time for us to get it. It was something we had to invest in and pray about for many, many years, and it's something that we are able to still live in the good of in a big way. I think one of the obvious ways in which it affects things is that it means we have a bigger fringe of new people amongst us than we might otherwise. All of the sites have a degree of fringe. All of the sites have new people who are getting to know us, not yet Christians, as many of them. Some of them are new Christians. Some have been Christians for a while, but they're looking for a church or new to town. We tend to have a slightly disproportionately large fringe, I reckon, and I think that's probably because of the visibility. And it gives us a lot of walk-in traffic, if you like, what business people would refer to, you know, walk-in trade, footfall trade. And that's not to be negated. It's something that we can make use of. It's a gift from God to steward well. So I'd say that's a huge thing in our favor. It's not, doesn't mean it's all in the bag, but it's a good thing to make use of. And I would have said many of the things that have been said, so I'm not going to add much to it besides that very important factor. I will also mention, but nevertheless, how grateful I am that some of the key leaders in the church, I mean, all of the sites are being led by mighty, mighty men, fantastic leaders, wonderful couples, teams. And we are blessed as a broad community across this city. But you need to know that we're doing very well in this site in terms of the leaders that God's given us. And I think in so many ways, I could think of the fact that the elders that serve here, I'll come to them later, but also the guys that lead worship here, the musicians, the sound guys. It seems as though God's given us the privilege of having some of our best talent it here, right in this central venue, and that's a tremendous gift as well. Let me just turn this around, do a really quick version of the same exercise, and could you just get into groups again, and just list the challenges that you might be able to see from this last year. What are the things that you think, you know what, since planting out, here are some of the challenges that we face, and we'll do this as quick as we can, we'll get it back together, I'll try and share a few more things, and then we'll have lunch. So go for it. Okay, we're going to have to come back together again. Lauren, can I pick on you to do the honours with the mic? Do you mind?
Right, let's start opposite way round. You guys can get to go first.
I think the preaching's a problem. Yeah. No, I'm joking. I think for us, it's the big thing that comes out is just a sense of, as a site, being commissioned. We've sent other sites, but as us, a sense of, what are we going for? Cool. The commissioning side.
Brilliant. How many S's and M's?
You get one challenge each, two Jim. Okay, this team. Come on, team two.
A lack of ownership.
Cool. Oh, really?
So people who come on this to this site with a culture of arrive late, leave early kind of vibe.
Ooh. It's hard to make jokes and challenges. Who's going to go? Caroline. Go on. It's all right, we won't be offended.
I think we were talking about a sense of loss, a sense of identity, and maybe a sense of feeling it harder to belong to something. Little pockets here and there, and not really the facilities to connect them and communicate together to build community.
Cool.
Great. Okay. You ready? Yeah, go on, Tom.
We thought a challenge would be to continue to disciple fresh believers to maturity, to keep up with growth as it comes.
Replacing leaders that we've sent out, that's a big challenge.
Did you say complacent leaders that we sent out?
Replacing.
We got rid of them because they were just complacent. Sorry, replacing them.
We think there's also... the expenses go up, but not necessarily the giving. And with new members and new Christians, they don't necessarily aren't giving as much as you know, once you've been a Christian for a time. So we think there's a financial gap, and new members is a challenge. Maybe Phil can expand on that because he can articulate it better than me. Yeah.
We're going to go slightly over half past.
We felt one church connection.
Sorry, Rob.
One church connection that actually we felt that it's quite hard. It's hard enough to get to know or to keep friendships here going, let alone getting renewing old friendships from other ones, especially when the Hove has gone. We found that quite difficult as a site. And also team in the age groups that we serve in, that's quite short, primarily because some have gone and we haven't been able to recruit new ones.
Talk about COGS specifically.
Yeah, well, we do the link actually, but yeah.
Yeah.
And Tiny COGS. Tiny COGS and the link are the two ones that we serve in.
Right.
Okay. Here we go.
Yeah, we just thought gaps in areas of serving where people have left and no shoes to fill, so getting people on the fringe to come in and fill those and just getting them in and staying in. And parking.
Parking.
We talked about that. The steam. He wants to go. Matt?
The elders? No. Sundays, just in terms of number of people in the room, in the services, just feeling a sense of sort of critical mass and lots of space, and it kind of affects the kind of worship and sense of momentum in the service.
Good.
Steve?
A challenge of how we reach out to some of our poorest neighbours, and particularly the containers down the road and the rough sleepers around the centre.
Thanks, Rob.
I just said the number of steps from the front door to this room.
You've got good thighs, though.
No, more on the grounds of just it could create a barrier for some people, I think. Yeah. I think it's quite a distance.
No, it's good.
Yeah.
It's a good point. Thanks, John.
Great.
Excellent. Thank you, Lauren. Everyone's feedback. Thanks, Lauren. Excellent. Okay, so bit of a range again, really helpful. Some things again that I wouldn't necessarily have thought of, but they're all valid and need our attention as leaders. And it's good for us in this environment to be open about them and to think about them and wrestle with these things a little bit. Obviously, some of them get our attention as elders a great deal, and particularly make us want to plan and prepare and sort of strategize for the future and where necessary bring about some change. So as you may have expected, some of what I'm going to do today will relate to these kinds of things and how we can kind of work forward on some of them. I won't be able to cover everything because we haven't got enough time, but some vital things I think that need to be addressed will do. We've just got time. If we push the break back a little and move lunch a little bit, we can get into just a few comments I'd like to make on this issue, and we can have lunch and I can sort of share after lunch a bit more about some of the particular changes that are intended. Bear with me if I use the language that some of you will know, some of you won't. We talk a lot about air war and ground war. We do that in eldership a lot. We've stolen the language from from our friends in the States. Air war in this context simply means ministry to the masses, ministry that's public. And under that banner, I would include things like Sunday preaching, Sunday worship, and so on. Our website, our publications, those things that are a sort of media focused, the use of big kind of tools to communicate in a public way. That's what we're referring to when we talk about air war. Ground war is when we're talking about connecting with people individually, connecting with people in closer community. And the ideal thing is for these two things to coexist and to, in fact, complement one another, that they serve each other, that we have a good air war and a good ground war. Obviously, in military situations, that's going to be powerful. So you have your air war where you're communicating in a big way, hopefully in a powerful way, so that hearts are being laid open by the gospel. People are responsive in the context of hearing the gospel preached, seeing it celebrated, and understanding the reality of it, perhaps by having an encounter with God here on a Sunday. You can have all of that and still not really build the church and make very little impact on the city, because the vital thing that people are brought into community, where there's accountability, there's relationship, there's trust, there's vulnerability, there's laying our lives down for one another. If that's not in place, then actually all that may have happened is someone has had some kind of passing experience. And we need desperately to be strong at ground war. We need to be strong at both. You can also be very committed to a very healthy kind of sense of community on a small scale, but lose your confidence in the power of the gospel proclaimed and the power of bringing together all that we have in terms of gifting for the sake of big celebration of the gospel on a Sunday. These front doors, as we call them, across the city, where we get to do air war, we get to preach the gospel, we get to celebrate the gospel publicly. And we see in Scripture, Jesus was committed to both. He did both the big crowds and the one-to-ones. He committed to infrastructure for community, raising up leaders to carry community, but also preaching to the masses. And we need to follow his model. So when I use that language, that's kind of where I'm coming from. To start with the challenges on an air war level, I would say that there's several on this right-hand side of the board. Someone talked about critical mass. I think that's a fairly big challenge for us, for sure. One of the realities of having this building, this room, in fact, is that we are faced with a critical mass factor when we start planting out. And planting out Shoreham and the race course within 4 months, 5 months of each other was certainly a risk. It was a risk that we took carefully, but it was a risk because we knew that by sending out effectively about 300 people at the time, maybe less than that, less than that, but a good chunk, we were going to find it very hard to retain that sense of critical mass in the room. This is a big deal. I think sometimes we can slightly underplay its significance and not realize that it plays a big part in how a meeting can feel. Just the fact that a room that's made for about 100 people with 95 people in it, it feels totally different than a room that's made for about 800 people with about 250 people in it. It does feel very, very different. And that may seem very kind of fleshly and unspiritual to talk in those terms, but I think God's put us in a world, a created world, with these kinds of considerations to take into account. There's nothing wrong with factoring in that issue. When you have a room that feels like, okay, we're together, we love each other, we feel like we're getting to know each other, but it's quite a big room, that's certainly a bit of a challenge. And it has to be borne in mind, especially in a context where we love worship, we love the sense of intense gathering to be in the presence of God. And in reality, sometimes a worship leader can be doing an incredibly good job leading a meeting and going for it, and the musicians could be leading well, and there's sort of nothing that's gone wrong necessarily, but the meeting just feels a little stodgy, a little hard, and in reality it can just be down to the fact that there's a few less bodies in the room than there used to be. And everyone in there is just as much hungry for God, but you're not seeing quite as many faces with that expression. And we just have to be real about that. We don't have to sort of call the police. It's not like a kind of terrible panic. It's just a reality, it's a factor to think, okay, now, how do we deal with that? It's not necessarily as easy to build that sense of strength of community, momentum. A crowd attracts a crowd. I've seen that happen in so many ways through my life in both open-air evangelism situations as well as mission on a Sunday. you know that when you are gathering big numbers, it tends to have a bit of a snowball effect. And we can't ignore that altogether. I'm sharing this with you as leaders. I'm trusting that you won't misread what I'm saying. You won't sort of panic and think that this is a major, major glaring kind of fundamental thing. It's just something we have to think wisely about. And I think it affects other things as well. Challenge that we have is that we do have this facility, and I believe God's given us grace to do big gatherings well. We have preachers amongst us, including myself, who feel very happy and called to preach to relatively large gatherings. We have worship leaders who can do that well. God's given us grace for that over the years, and we've grown in it. And yet at the same time, God's given us this kind of counterbalancing grace to multiply. Again, that's not small. That is a big deal. Not every church can do what's been done. Okay, not to boast in it. It's God's grace amongst us. It's all of grace, but He has given us the ability to multiply well, and it's amazing what's happened. And that suggests to me when He speaks to us about five cities and beyond, you know, the vision tends to expand, you know, again and again. It makes me think that multiplication is kind of here to stay. So we're faced with this slight challenge. You know, how do we both multiply increasingly, and how do we also keep this kind of emphasis on the big gathering as well, which is healthy and very it gives strength to us as a whole sort of church network, if you like, as we multiply outwards. I think one observation I'd make is that the Shoreman Racecourse risk paid off really quick. So actually, we grew so fast as a site after launching Shoreman the Racecourse that we didn't really feel the pain that much. Sunday still felt fairly crowded, even after we'd launched out hundreds of people. Now, the truth is that isn't quite what happened when we launched out Hove in September. We launched out a smaller number, actually, into Hove, but somehow it affected our critical mass a little bit more. It meant that we just feel... Now, I don't understand why God's allowed that to be the case. I don't understand why it's gone that way around, but it has, and that's just something for us to be considering and being wise about. A friend of mine who I've been to see over in Malmo in Sweden recently, who's a fantastic church planter, leads a wonderful church in that city, and he's planting churches all over Europe. Very, very similar vision, very similar values. I think you might hear more about him, a man called Magnus Persson. He's done a good job of this. He's recognized that there's a necessity for them as a church to keep multiplying. And his approach has been to say, okay, that's that when we gather in big scale, it will be the exception. It will be rarer. And that's the way he's dealt with it. He said, okay, so once a month at the most, they have a bigger gathering with many hundreds. Other times through the week, they have their smaller gathering, through the month, they have their smaller gathering Sunday by Sunday around the city and as they plant out into other cities. I'm not convinced that's the way we're meant to go. I think God's given us this room, and I want to have faith that we'll keep filling it. So I'm not copying Magnus, but I'm thinking he's got wisdom about how to think about this issue of critical mass and how we gather. So I'm just kind of working this stuff through with you as I talk, and I'll come back after lunch to share a little bit about how I want to go forward and try and rectify some of these issues. The ground war side, before we split, is also... an area of challenge. So we've talked about air war in the last 10 minutes. Ground war, we have... someone talked about lack of ownership. That's a fairly helpful phrase for what I'm getting at. People that have planted out into the racecourse and Shoreham and Hove, by definition, the fact they've done that, the fact they've gone, heightens that sense of missionary endeavor. That's the reason they're not in this site now. They're saying, okay, we are going to this site. We're going there. We're making a deliberate, intentional choice. They may have had, in some respects, not much choice because their zone kind of did it en masse. But nevertheless, the change, the practical change of where they meet on a Sunday has affected how they see their role. I'm here in this new site. If I don't help make this happen, it won't happen. And God, when you read the scriptures, you realize God wants a church where everybody feels ownership. We're all part of the body. We all it stands or falls by all of us. We serve one another and we serve the vision together. I think it's natural for it to be a little harder to lift that sense of ownership in the site that has sent the others out. Okay, you've probably heard me say this before, but it's worth repeating. Okay, the site that has sent the others out is feeling less novelty, feeling less immediate excitement, feeling less of a sense of, you know, mission to get our teeth into. It feels a little bit more like, okay, we're the ones that haven't gone. That's our common denominator. We're the ones that have stayed. And that's actually great, because God wants us to stay, to serve. Part of mission is stay, like Jeremiah, stay there in the city. That can be mission just as much as going. You don't have to go to be on mission. You just have to serve God faithfully where you are. But nevertheless, it's just a practical reality. And so I would say there are all kinds of bits and pieces of this. For example, we have small group life, where small groups would often feel like, yeah, we know that as a small community, we want to be on mission, but there's a disconnect between what that means and what happens on a Sunday. We have small groups, quite a few, where the bulk of the small group goes to one service and the others go to another, or where the leader goes to one service and the small group goes to another service, or some that are just split down the middle. Now, none of that is failure. That's all fine. That's fine up until now, because I think we need to address that. I think one of the things that we need very much is for community life to be reflected through the week, including on a weekend. For us to feel like when we go to church, we go as a community. We're part of it together. Ideally, for small groups to be at the same service, I think, is a really good move. So that when you gather as a service, you're gathering as not a fixed community, but a kind of a known community. You know who you are. And if there's someone there who's new, we all feel that this person's new and we want to all get to know this person. The danger of the sending site and, the site with the big venue, slightly bigger crowd, is the danger of anonymity and a kind of mishmash between services, when there's not necessarily a sense of cohesive community. We're all coming together this Sunday to be together on mission together. It can even be, as I think someone said, that you have a lot of people who come really to watch. And that would be true of some of our people, not just the fringe, but some of the people who've been around for a while. And this isn't to cast any blame. It's just something that we have to say, okay, how do we help people to not see this as just a sort of spectator sport, something to come and sit down and just kind of watch and be part of it in a kind of a consumerist way, and then go away and have my real life. I long for church to be far more a sense, you know, we're on mission as a community together. And we feel that, even on the Sunday, we feel that together. We're excited to be together. We know God's amongst us. We know there are new people God's drawing in. This is where I want to bring my friends to, because I want them to meet him and her and her and him. And we want to share that sense of mission on a Sunday. I would say that observing the new sites, that would characterize them probably more than it characterizes. There's no probably. I'm pulling my punches. It does characterize them more than it characterizes this site. Now that's totally understandable. There isn't any sense in which I'm addressing anyone with the blame. It's completely what you'd expect given our recent history, but it's an issue we need to deal with. I think when you go to, say you go to the race course on a Sunday, you sense that the majority of people come with a sense of intentional engagement, not just engagement for themselves with God, but with the community that they've joined and the people that are new that they want to draw in as well. It feels like an adventure. That's a beautiful thing. That's a wonderful hallmark of the church. And so I'm saying, how do we deal with that? How do we draw that back in? It's there with us, but it's not there to the same level, and I'm jealous. I want to see it here. So that's one of the ground war issues. I think it's something to be kind of considered and prayed about, and as I say, addressed in some transitions that we want to announce today. So I'm going to hold you in suspense, call lunch, give you a reason to come back, and we will share a little bit about what's on our minds for the next stage after that.